This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. An invasive plant called Ailanthus altissima is fast becoming a threat to native forests. It's also known as Tree of Heaven and is a tough urban tree that sprouts out of sidewalks. It came to the U.S. from China by way of England in the 1700s, and now it's found in 40 states. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel talked to Matt Cawson, an assistant professor of forest pathology at West Virginia University, about why Tree of Heaven has thrived here.
Ailanthus is a non-native tree that's done really well. It's been really successful. I think it's found in 40 states, including most of Pennsylvania. And your newest research sort of clues us into why. What did you find?
We've known for a while now that Ailanthus is pretty aggressive in colonizing the landscape. But what was unclear to us, and really the motivation behind the study, was to figure out its reproductive potential. If you drive down the highways right now, you can see these brilliant red to orange colored seed clusters, prolific seed production on individual trees. But we wondered, how much seed could these trees actually produce in a single year and over a lifetime?
And what did you find?
Well, we found that there are some exceptionally reproductively capable individuals across the landscape. We found one tree in particular on the campus of Penn State University that routinely puts out about 700,000 seeds a year and has been doing so for almost a century. So the cumulative seed production of that tree is somewhere north of 50 million seeds over its lifetime.
That seems kind of remarkable.
Right. Now, that's an exceptional tree. But we found that, on average, a tree that lived 40 years and was reproductively capable during that window could produce upwards of 10 million seeds.
And your study mentions viability. That's the success of the seed once it gets into the ground, if it's going to become a tree or not.
Yeah, and I think viability is a really important aspect, because if a tree can produce a million seeds per year and viability is 3%, well, that's not a lot of reproductive capacity. But if viability is north of 70%, like we found on our a few of our individuals, including this 104-year-old individual in Pennsylvania, the potential for producing a lot of progeny over a lifetime is exceptional.
So why is this tree's kind of super reproductive power and its spread a problem?
It wasn't always a problem, and I think the way that we manage land and landscapes have changed over time. Following another invasive pest, the gypsy moth, we saw widespread land clearing, which really set up these forests for Ailanthus. Gypsy moth has been here since the 1800s, and it's started to devastate forests in Pennsylvania and throughout the Appalachian region, late 70s, early 80s. And we saw widespread salvage harvesting in the aftermath of this gypsy moth defoliation, because the defoliation was so severe that it actually killed a lot of the oak trees that were occupying these ridge tops in south-central Pennsylvania and in elsewhere throughout the mid-Atlantic. So one reproductively capable female tree at the edge of this clear cut seeded in the whole clear cut, and now you're left not with native trees regenerating, but a whole entire stand of invasive trees.
Is this something that's worrying for foresters?
Absolutely. Tree of Heaven not only can outcompete native species that might seed into those same clearings, but it also produces compounds that inhibit the germination of native plants. It's called allelopathic, and what it does is it produces these compounds that make the site more suitable for itself to regenerate and less suitable for native plants. If we think about the spotted lanternfly, which is a new pest that's just been found in Pennsylvania, in Berks County, it actually requires Tree of Heaven to fulfill its life cycle. It feeds on the foliage, it lays eggs on the stems, and it's a real threat to the grape industry. Tree of Heaven is pretty well established throughout most of the counties in Pennsylvania, with the exception of a few of the northern tier counties. So in that sense, it could follow Tree of Heaven up towards Erie and up to New York into the Finger Lakes region, where it could directly threaten and impact the grape and wine industries in those regions.
How can you get rid of them? Can you cut them down, or what are some of the ways that you can remove them?
I've been working on biological control using native fungi to kill Tree of Heaven in these forest settings for about a decade now. But there's still plenty of stands of Atlantis that haven't been controlled. And until they're removed, whether it be through biological control or chemical applications or mechanical removal, they're going to continue to be underproductive forests that supplant native species and prevent future generations of native forested stands from establishing.
Tree of Heaven is commonly thought of, I think, as an urban tree. How did they move into the forests?
Yeah, that's a good question. For a long time, it just kind of hung out in Philadelphia and in New York as kind of a botanical oddity passed around among early botanists. And then seed-producing trees were established, and soon seedlings were available through a lot of the nursery trade. And followed the railroad corridors east and west, we noticed a huge spike in the spread of Tree of Heaven in Pennsylvania following the completion of the Horseshoe Curve, which connected the east and western part of the state. Tree of Heaven moved along those transportation corridors, much like they move along our interstate highways now. But as to how they got in the forest, with building of roads and things like that, we see movement of invasive species, whether it be through gravel or just that there's a lot of exposed soil, which allows prolific seed-producing species to establish. There was a recent study done out of Penn State that showed that these Marcellus Shale well sites are now being taken over by a number of invasive plant species. We predict that Tree of Heaven will follow suit because it does occur up in those northern tier counties, but they're not really widespread as of yet. But with all this new road building and road construction to support the gas industry, I think we'll see a lot more spread of these invasive species that are common throughout the southern part of the state.
Okay, well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Matt Cawson is an assistant professor of forest pathology at West Virginia University, and he spoke with the Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel. The Allegheny Front reports on the environment in Pennsylvania. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Scattered rain and thunderstorms, partial clearing in the afternoon with highs in the 70s and lower 80s, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 60s, partly sunny Wednesday with high temperatures in the 70s and 80s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the West Virginia Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Employer services at wvdrs.org. Last week on West Virginia Morning, we met Crystal Snyder, a single mother of two who says she wants to stay in West Virginia and raise her children here. As a single mom, it's on Crystal to provide for her family, which is hard to do without a job. A couple of years ago, she lost her job at a t-shirt factory. That's where Roxy Todd picks back up with Crystal's struggle to stay story.
In October of 2015, Crystal lost her job. She takes me to the factory where she used to work. It's a plain gray building that's grim on the outside.
There were no women that ran the machines, and so I kind of raised hell because I wanted to run a machine. You know, I wanted to make more money. I wanted to have more responsibility here.
Crystal says the men earn more pay at the t-shirt factory. But it was more than the money that bothered her.
I was just kind of bored catching shirts down at the end of the dryer, so I wanted to do something else, and it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way that no women were operators.
She's always thought of herself as a tough person, and she's proud of her strength. She isn't afraid to do work that men typically do.
I kind of like non-traditional, or like men's jobs. Maybe it's a pride thing, I don't know. I like physical jobs. I like jobs that people might be surprised that they might see me doing, or I don't know, I just like to be different.
Crystal asked to be promoted to work the machines, but her supervisor told her no and didn't consider her for a different job. She didn't file a discrimination suit against the company for that or for the sexual harassment she says she endured at the factory.
It just seems like there wasn't a lot of respect. Like, hey, your butt looks good in those jeans, or just perverted harassment.
Crystal didn't complain because she figured it would just make things worse if she wanted to keep her job. But one thing she didn't tolerate at the factory was racism. Some of her coworkers put up giant rebel flags on their trucks and said racist things. Crystal is white, but when the racism went unchecked, it bothered her.
I was like all I could take, and I just went to the boss and I was like, this isn't right. You know, this is not a good environment to work in. And it was like a week or two later, the boss came to me and said like that business had slowed down and that he was going to lay me off. And I was like, it's because I complained. He's like, no, that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Even though she still believed she was unfairly terminated, she didn't seek legal counsel after she lost her job at the t-shirt factory. She didn't want to get anyone in trouble, and she didn't want to deal with the stress of courts and lawyers. Because none of this was resolved in court, and since the company went out of business in 2016, we're withholding the name of the company where she worked. After she was laid off, money was tight. Crystal got behind on some of her bills. During the holidays, she got help from her ex to buy a few presents for her kids.
They had something, but yeah, it was definitely a tough Christmas.
Still, she tried not to worry and stayed busy looking for work. This wasn't the first time she had to figure out how to survive as a single mom. She'd struggled 3 years earlier, right after she divorced her second husband. It was a brief marriage, and things ended abruptly.
I just found myself like, I've got rent and bills and I've got to buy food and gas. Like, how am I going to do this? You know, I went from having help, like we'd split all the bills and everything and the food and everything, to just totally me. And it was really scary. And I remember like the house felt like dark and cold.
Although the t-shirt factory eventually became, as she puts it, a toxic place to work, she was happy for the money. Still, she says she's glad she isn't working there anymore.
I'm thankful for the job, but it wasn't a happy place. It wasn't someplace that I wanted to stay. But I didn't really know what I would do. I thought maybe when the kids grew up, then maybe I could go to college and do something. I didn't know what. But I was just trying to keep the bills paid, you know, and just try to be happy for them and do things on the weekends and just keep things going.
But Crystal soon found another job. What was it? We'll hear the next part of the story tomorrow here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Jesse Wright. I'm Teresa Wills.